This is a Dynamike Network podcast.
That's right, folks. When you hear that badass guitar riff, you know it is time for some Max Destruction. Welcome back, folks, to another exciting week. I know I'm excited. Your main macho man, Scotty Camacho, over there is really excited. And, of course, I'm Ken. We are here in a slightly different capacity this week with our characters. I'm pretty excited about it. It's a departure, we'll say, a departure of sorts. But I think it's going to be quite welcome. Speaking of welcome, Scotty, how you doing, dude?
I am doing good. And I'm sorry to say, but I watched it, Ken. I watched it. The Roadhouse.
No, you didn't. No,
I did, no. Sir. I did.
Oh my gosh.
My eyes are tearing up just thinking about it right now.
Was it that good or was it that bad?
It's in between. I can honestly say, unless it's in a UFC style type of movie, mixed martial arts does not translate onto movie fight scenes very well.
You know, it really doesn't. I remember, and this takes me back to when Batman Begins first came out. And they were talking about how the choreography was done in a different way than other Batman films, where in the previous Batman films, they showed some type of stand-up martial arts, right? Whereas with Batman Begins, they were doing like a really MMA-style gritty fight. It just didn't translate very well. It didn't really show the mastery of skill. So I could definitely see that being an issue. But I'm not disheartened to hear that it wasn't great.
And I'm tired of freaking, that's the most I've seen of Conor McGregor naked. Like, why? Wow.
So that definitely is on you. Like all of that is your fault. And, honestly, I'm here for it. Not only am I here for it, but the 01 is here for it. Let's hear it from Francis.
Welcome to the Dynamike Network. I am the cyber intelligent being that has dominion over the domain of the Max Destruction Arena. I am the 01, but you may call me Francis. I will take your favorite heroes, villains, and any other jacked up protagonist across the cinematic multiverse and put them to the ultimate test of metal. Two brawlers will enter the arena, but only one can reign supreme. However, all paths lead to Max Destruction.
After thinking of Conor McGregor naked, I needed a palate cleanser, so thanks, appreciate that. All right, dude, so before we get into this week's episode, of course, we have last week's Wham. Would you like to go ahead and run us through?
Yes, sir. So we had Eddie Murphy's Vampire in Brooklyn. And I got a good amount on Facebook here. Some freaking hilarious ones that you're going to probably love. First off, Blade, of course. This is your favorite, Jacob from Twilight.
Love me some Jacob. Definitely team Jacob all the way.
Hugh Jackman's Van Helsing, Celine from Underworld, another vampire hunter. What is this? Luke Evans, Dracula.
Yeah, Dracula Untold.
Yep. American Werewolf from London. We have Wednesday Addams. I'm more from the Netflix series. I forgot what his name was, or I can't pronounce it right. But Nicolas Cage, he did the vampire movie.
Yeah, so it was from Renfield. He was Dracula from Renfield.
And then last but not least, Chuck Norris as Chuck Norris.
Well, I mean, be honest. Is there going to be anybody else that can even stand up to Chuck Norris?
No.
I realize your brother dropped a ton of knowledge on that, and I'm here for it. I thought the Nick Cage was a nice touch. Like, I don't know if you've seen that movie yet or not. Renfield.
Oh, yeah.
Highly suggest it is the Dracula you've always wanted, because Nick Cage is not only the Dracula, but the Superman and the Spider-Man you've always wanted. And you never knew it, which is awesome. I'm superbly impressed by our answers this week.
I'm surprised you didn't just put Renfield. That would have been a good one too.
Yeah, it was funny. It's like when I brought that character out, I think I've seen that movie once, like a grand total of one time. And I remember, so I grew up in the era of all the slasher flicks and like becoming desensitized by that. And I've had this conversation in the past where, you know, a younger Ken definitely, yeah, there's probably reasons why he is the way he is for all the films that he watched way too soon. But I honestly remember being afraid of that movie, and I was really kind of trying to drill down on why. It was because of Eddie Murphy. Like, seeing Eddie Murphy be terrifying in some sequences, and the fact that the movie was made by Wes Craven. Like, I didn't even realize that film was created by Wes Craven, so it was going to have some terrifying elements. And, you know, trying to equate, you know, Beverly Hills Cop and Coming to America with that character, I think it's one of Eddie Murphy's best films.
Oh, yeah, especially like you said, it's just on the other side of humor. Just, I've always seen him as the comedic role. And then when you see him take on a serious role, I mean, it was the same thing with Jim Carrey when he did, was it 21? Was it 23?
The number 23, yeah.
Yeah, that one too was just insane. And the same thing goes for Robin Williams. You got these comedic guys that can do these serious roles and actually make it really, really good.
So, of course, we will be dropping our next week's Wham! At the end of this episode, so stay tuned for that. And then make sure it's not just Scotty's brother that's dropping the knowledge. Normally, we get at least one answer from Strosky, our compatriot over at Console Combat. We did not. Obviously, he was too scared. He needed his little baby blanket and pillow in order to get through this last week's Wham! And, you know, I get it. I get it. But in that vein, I think it's time for what's becoming the newest and hottest section of our podcast, Taking It to the Mat.
Yeah, that's right. The Macho Man Randy Savage here to tell you that the Max Destruction Jabronis will be heading to your rear soon, entering the squared circle. That's right. They're heading for the big time. Ooh, yeah.
All right, Scott, lay it on us. What happened this week?
All right, so it's everything is building up to WrestleMania. WrestleMania is going to come next, not this weekend, but the next weekend, April 5th. Well, 5th and 6th. We had back and forth promos between The Rock and Cody Rhodes. This time, Cody Rhodes laid the hammer down, and holy crap, he called out The Rock, and called The Rock saying that he has LDS, little dick syndrome. It was like, holy shit. And The Rock's been doing this on Instagram, and Cody did this live on TV. So that whole PG area is probably gone now.
Well, I think we talked about last week having The Rock come back and be an integral part of this lead up to WrestleMania and starting to become more involved in the company is really kind of bringing that attitude era back, which is sorely needed, I feel like, for this company. I mean, you got to evolve, but sometimes you got to go back to your roots, which is awesome. Anything else?
There's going to be a big tag team match set for WrestleMania. I think it's going to have like 6 or 8 teams going in like a ladder match. So that's going to be huge just in that in itself. But with WrestleManias comes the Hall of Fame ceremonies. And the inductees that have been announced so far is Paul Heyman, who is a freaking fantastic manager. This guy just needs to stand next to a wrestler and he already makes them a star, i.e. Brock Lesnar. Muhammad Ali, the celebrity inductee. Bull Nakano. I think she was like either like a tag team with, if you remember, what is her name? Not Mula. I think it was Mula, but she's the like
the fabulous Mula.
Not the fabulous Mula, but she had like the shaved. She had the mohawk with the like the painted lightning tattoos on her on her head. Then you have Thunderbolt Patterson, and then you have the U.S. Express tag team of Barry Windham and Mike Rotunda. And so with Mike Rotunda being inducted in there too, they're also saying that his late son, Wyndham Rotunda, the late Bray Wyatt, might also be inducted as well. And that is it for the mat.
All right. Well, I mean, you can't have everything all at once. I think their buildup has been pretty legit for this WrestleMania. And you know, I'm going to have to watch it now, because it's become a part of this, which dang, just so unfortunate. Although I don't know how I feel about the Saturday and Sunday thing. Like we talked about this in the past. Like I remember, you know, maybe flying on the pirate ship, for certain pay-per-views, during the 2000s, and you know, or it was an event, right? So you had your monthly pay-per-view, you know, you bought the finger foods, you invited your buddies over, you know, y'all sat in the floor, or you were, you know, dropping people with a leg drop, or, you know, supine or whatever, all that crap that, you know, probably should have killed you, but didn't, thankfully. I don't know. I think maybe going 2 days is a little much. I feel like having that one night, that one spectacle, because I feel like at a certain point you hit saturation. But you know what? What do I know? I'm not the one making millions of dollars off the wrestling entertainment.
No, I'm with you on there. It's like watching the Super Bowl twice. I mean, it's
yeah.
You can't. There's not enough food, enough energy to go 2 days with that.
So good work on the mat, buddy, and we will look forward to next week, which is the penultimate prior to. I can't wait to hear what goes down. I'm sure The Rock will have some kind of comeback. He tends to have those, you know, those witty one-liners coming back on it, but it's pretty legit. But before we get into our match, we should probably remind the audience who we've got. And these are two colossal powerhouses of action cinema. I mean, these guys are not them ever. Those are the guys, they're just slightly to the left and maybe sitting in a chair with like Cheeto dust on their forearms. That's right, folks. We have Ned Leeds, the guy in the chair from Spider-Man, versus Micro, the guy in the chair for the Punisher, talking smack at each other over MySpace, because that's in my mind how this is going to go. Mm-hmm. And we're going to have them fight against each other, talking to them and about them by two guys in a chair. Yeah, it's going to be great. I can't wait, honestly, because usually these matches, we have like zero expectation and they turn out to be some of our greatest. I'm pretty excited about it. Let's have Francis discuss how we break it down, which is the tale of the cocoa butter.
On Max Destruction, the hosts use a semi-idiotic method called the tale of the cocoa butter as a clever device to provide character backstories, much like Rogan does at the UFC. The hosts go through their respective characters' backgrounds, abilities, and equipment to provide the best possible description for the listeners. If these guys were to just use your run-of-the-mill standards, they couldn't really claim to be an action character podcast, could they?
I mean, yes, and these guys are the very definition of action-packed, I think, is the clue. Scotty, I think it is your turn. Why don't you drop us some science on Ned?
Ned leads. Side note, I'm at least for the movies, Ned Leeds is a combination of two characters. Harry Osborn, in which case the director and producer said they used Harry Osborn too much, so they needed a new character. If you've played the Spider-Man games on PlayStation, the new one with Miles and from the Spider-Verse is Gangi Lee. And so you take those two characters, put them together, you got Ned. Ned is a former student of Midtown School of Science and Technology with his best friend, Peter Parker. Once learning of Peter's secret identity as a vigilante Spider-Man, Ned started to assist Parker in stopping the Vulture from selling weapons and later become one of the many victims of the dissemination by Thanos. Once resurrected in 2023, Ned began to date Betty Brant. Why this information's on here, I have no clue. But he had a girlfriend. While going on a school trip to Europe, but would assist Peter in trying to keep his alter ego a secret. Following the Mysterio exposing Peter's identity, Ned was called in by Doctor Strange to help them return the visitors, i.e. the people that broke through who all knew who Peter Parker was. That came through the realities after botching a spell, though successful in returning them to their alternate versions of Spider-Man, Ned, alongside with the rest of the Wrong, had their memories erased of Peter and his secret identity. Ned is portrayed by Jacob Batalon, Filipino guy, which is awesome. And his abilities, his alias is he's the guy in the chair. He is a student, an MIT student, now as we saw at the end of Far From Home. He has a genius level intelligence in hacking and computer skills, in computer science, and knowledge on technology. He also possesses a little bit of sorcery when he tried to use the sling ring that he got from Doctor Strange, in which case, randomly, he can pull up portals. He may not get it right, but he can do it from alternate dimensions, apparently. That's how he grabbed the other Spider-Man. And that is Ned Leeds.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I think maybe we have to have these guys as tag teams because Ned is nowhere near as cool without his grandma. His grandma
his herself Lolo.
Was his Lolo was amazing.
Yes.
So yeah, I remember Ned from the comics way back in the day, but he definitely wasn't the character that they built out. And the fact that they kind of pulled that string or web, if you will, a little bit in Far From Home, you know, talking about how he's never going to be, you know, be a bad guy that tries to kill him, where in the comics, he does become Hobgoblin, at a certain point, which is pretty funny. Yeah. Ned's awesome. However, I can't continue to blow smoke up Ned without explaining his challenger, who, of course, played way, way cooler in the TV show The Punisher on Netflix with Jon Bernthal. But I didn't feel like that was a fair fight, honestly. Lieberman, Micro from The Punisher TV show, a little bit more useful in the fighting department. So I went with the next best thing, which of course is Linus Lieberman, aka Micro from Punisher Warzone, played brilliantly. by Wayne Knight. That's right, you Seinfeld fans, Wayne Knight. So Linus Lieberman, Micro to his friends, was the secret armor of the Punisher, a source of information on the criminal's activities, and his only friend. He lived with his physically disabled mother and helped Castle in his war against crime by providing him weapons. When Nicky Donatelli was killed, the Punisher wished to stop his vigilante activity and went to Micro in order to inform him. Micro tried to convince him not to do this, claiming there'd be a need for people like Castle in the world. He managed, at least, to convince him to kill Jigsaw and his brother first, and then reconsider his position. He then told Carlos Cruz, a former criminal that he had rehabilitated, to help the Punisher find McGinty and give them both new weapons. When Jigsaw discovered Micro's existence, he had his mother killed and kidnapped him in order to take him hostage. Then the Punisher broke into Brad's Street Hotel. The criminal forced him to choose who was going to be saved. If he chose Micro, Looney Ben Jim would kill Grace Donatelli. If he chose Grace, Jigsaw would shoot Micro. Micro told the Punisher to shoot him, wanting to save the child's life, and Frank agreed, asking for forgiveness and telling him that he won't feel anything at least. Then he then shot Jim, while Jigsaw, in rage, shot Micro in the head, killing him instantly. Of course, in this fight, he's definitely not dead. But it's interesting, both of these characters came back from the dead. So Micro was the only person that Frank Castle could call a friend. He gave him weapons and information that could fight him in his crusade against criminals. He is a noble and altruistic person with a vast set of knowledge in not only computers, hacking, criminal justice, as well as weapons systems. He's able to set up traps and things of that nature, but that's as far as really kind of the film goes. He's kind of a one-trick pony. Ned definitely has a lot more meat to him, but that's this version of Micro. Again, you know, he's that, one would say, angel on the shoulder of Frank Castle. However, he does convince Frank to continue to kill people, so maybe dirty wings. We'll say angel with dirty wings for Frank. And honestly, I think this is going to be a great match. I don't really care what anyone else says. This is going to be great to watch two guys in the chair duke it out. And I think we'll talk about that a little bit more on this side of Francis explaining how we do our sims.
The hosts believe that the next best thing to creating an irrefutable method to decide things, like a coin flip, would be hacking into AJ9K, the AI that those dynamic dual fools, sorry, upstanding gentlemen use. Once hacked, the guys input statistics for the subjects of this week's fight, including strength, fighting style, and most importantly, humor. The stats are then compared 1,000 times, presenting a final result to determine the ultimate victor. To avoid boring your ears off with numbers game, the hosts have elected to present a speculation on how one of the fights play out for your listening pleasure. Now, despite my best efforts, it seems that every simulation manages to occur within the vicinity of the safe house I find my way to. Fortunately, the environment isn't relevant to the simulations. I mean, fortunate for them and you. It sucks for me.
I'm going to go out on a limb, Scott, and say that, you know, Francis's stuff is probably going to be pretty much okay at the end of this, as a little bit of foreshadowing for our destruction spectrum. But for the case of this fight, I think what we should do is something very similar to a Christmas episode that we did last year, where I had Kevin McAllister versus Jigsaw, where both of these individuals are going to have to go through a city street, a building of some sort, with surveillance or something to that effect, traps set up by the other character. But we both know at the end of this, what's going to happen is both these guys are going to have to push off from their desks and go mano a mano. I think that's the only true way of finishing this. Do you agree, Scott?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so in that case, what we will do is we will say that Ned thinks that Peter's been taken hostage, or, you know, that there's information on Spider-Man that only Micro has. And Ned has taken it upon himself for some reason to go into a building where he feels like Micro is. And with that, we will start this side of the speculation and then swap it about halfway through. So without further ado, Scott.
So any building?
And we're going to say it's a like dock building in Brooklyn, right? So kind of like a
like
hangar.
Starbucks, where all hackers hang out.
More like an old hangar kind of thing. Both of these guys like the piece, and we both know that they would not be caught drinking dead, you know, in Starbucks. You know, they both are French press men.
Okay, so Ned's going to go into this building. He's going to pull out his smartwatch. And he's going to try to communicate with Karen, that is Spider-Man's AI for his suit. So Karen should be feeding him back a positioning for Peter.
Okay, so as Ned is going in there, cameras are starting to like ping off, and there's some that are very conspicuous, right? Like really old school CCTV cameras, but there's also a whole bunch that Ned can't see. And then on the other side of those cameras, there's just furious typing going on. And then all of a sudden, that signal that Ned is pulling in from his smartwatch, there's another one, and then another one. And then another one, and another one, and then there's 100 signals all over the map that this kid is pulling in from his smartwatch, spoofing the signal that he is getting, trying to render it useless.
Okay, so Ned's going to shut his watch off because it's inert right now. He sees just like in most movies, like there's like a monitor just hanging on the wall. So he goes to this monitor and he starts logging in, goes through the mainframe, and is trying to get access in there. Of course, someone, you know, the password is password, so he was able to figure that out. Goes in there and he sees that there's an algorithm with the cameras that if any electronics were to kick on, it's going to put out a false signal. So he reverses that algorithm and is pinging it. It reverses the ping to wherever the source is. So he's able to pinpoint exactly where that is and then see a schematic blueprint of the building in there. And he sees it's just a one singular room. And so he initiates lockdown for that room. The alarms are going off, and then he's able to see that there's another terminal to where supposedly he thinks Peter is, and he's going to go straight to that one.
All right, so as Ned's doing this, you know, he's jacked in, like, the whole cool information superhighway from, like, 1998's Hackers is going on, right? And, like, there's information going one way. I'm not that computer savvy. The fact that I can turn this thing on and I can talk to the internet is about as far as I go. But a lot of cool things are happening, we'll say. So, you know, Micro is impressed. I mean, this kid definitely seems to know what he's doing around a computer, and just the simple fact that he was able to reverse engineer the ping is awesome. So Micro allows Ned to come through the facility, and as he walks into a door right before he gets to his, the doors lock. And the alarm is still going off, but then all of a sudden it goes dead quiet. I mean, you could hear a pin drop. And then, like over a loudspeaker, Halon activated. And then the Halon system just dumps fire, you know, retardant all over the room, snuffing out the oxygen, in which Micro thinks this is it for Ned.
All right. Well, Ned would be shitting in his pants right now. But he was, you know, MIT student, very good at engineering and wiring. The locked door, he was able to get behind a panel and hot wire the wire so it can pop the door open just enough for him to squeeze his big ass right through. And so as he gets on there, his smartwatch can turn into a drone. So he pops up his drone. He's still speaking with Karen. And so Karen is able to fly through the ventilation and then give him, you know, feedback on Peter's location. At the same time, he found another desk where he's on the laptop, and he's trying to send malware, i.e. a virus, to Micro, right? And so when Micro looks at his computer, he's going to get a little pop-up, a big fat dude from like a really, really old movie. It's saying, you didn't say the magic word, And that's going to go on repeat for about 30 minutes.
Wow. I mean, you went there. I mean, that was going to be kind of one of my big reveals, but yeah, thanks, Scott. I appreciate that. All right. You know what? It's fine. So as Ned feels like he's getting the better of Micro and just the sheer gall and insanity of this kid, Micro like wipes his giant head, you know, the sweat coming off his brow. He's kind of getting the flop sweat going on, and he pounds his final energy drink. And then he does it like a swift keystroke and slams the return button. And then as Ned is waiting for that drone to pull in more information, all of a sudden, everything in the room, to include his smartwatch, blinks off and then begins its reboot sequence. And it's just the cat playing the piano video. That's it. It's just the cat playing the piano video. And then all of a sudden, a light turns on behind Ned, and there is Micro going, "All right, kid, let's dance." And that's where we'll stop this side of the segment, and we're going to reverse it now. So now we're going to say that Ned is held up wherever he is, and Micro's got to go in. I will say Micro is likely, you know, looking for Frank. He knows that, you know, Frank is always getting himself into mischief. You know, Micro's probably got just, you know, his normal stuff on him, but that's it. And then he's going to head out. So he'll go in the building.
Okay. And then he's going to trip a sensor, a motion sensor. It goes to Ned. He goes on to video footage and then sees a person step in. So what it's going to do is he's going to initiate a lockdown. The window panels come down, the metal door closes, right behind them, and then you're going to hear Ned over the intercom, "Welcome, you so-called hacker. I want to play a game."
So Micro hears this, and he can obviously tell that this is like barely out of high school sounding kid, right? So he's just going to look around and go, did you just learn about hacking from your dad? Is that, boy, I have been doing this longer than you've been alive. And that's when Micro reaches into his jacket and he pulls out this device. It looks somewhat like a Walkman. And for those of you that are old enough to remember, they are very understandably seen, right? So he's going to open up the Walkman. He's going to pull the CD out. Then he's going to turn the Walkman and then use the laser to screw with the camera that's in the corner. And it's going to mess and implant malware into the camera stream, which then degausses and debugs the entire system, lifting the lockdown. And then Micro's going to hurry his fat ass through the next door.
Well, he's going to see Ned's going to see the Walkman and he's going to be like, "Dude, what are you, like 80? And so he sees him move into the next room. And then there's, upon going into that room, what Micro didn't know is that he stepped on a pressure plate that ignited a Tesla sensor onto the ground. So now he has 10 seconds to find cover that is not on the ground or he will be electrocuted.
Damn, you went there. Like, all right. Well, I mean, Micro can feel the pressure plate shift down, and he can hear like the buzzing of like a Tesla coil picking up. And he knows that this kid probably has watched way too many movies where he thinks that, you know, just because a guy walks into a trap means he doesn't know exactly how to fix it. So he is going to quick scan the room and try to find where the electrical conduit goes into the floor. And it has to be somewhere from above because this is a New York City building. They don't have anything down below, right? So he quick finds the conduit, and then he throws himself dead on the conduit, yanking it out of the wall, pulling the power free. So keeping the Tesla coil from kicking off. In which case, he's going to kind of push himself up, you know, very probably breathing heavily at this point. I mean, he can move, you know, when the, you know, food dictates. In which case, he's going to go, I can do this like all, okay, maybe not all day, but like one or two more times, like really. And then he's going to lumber through the next door.
Now, as he opens the next door, Ned was like, I really, really hoped he got to this point. So he hits a big red button. Bam, you hear a big alarm. And then all of a sudden, this Lego Death Star that him and Peter built comes flying down like a record hammer, smacks him right in the face and just shatters. That sends Micro all dazed. He's tripping back, and then a little plate comes up off the ground, just enough for Micro to trip. And then he falls, smash, right on a coffee table. Ned just turns on intercom, and you just hear him laughing loud.
I was so hoping, like, honestly, hope against hope, that you'd pull up a Lego Death Star. At the very least, at some point during this. Because of all the things that happened in that movie, that was the most unreal and unrealistic thing. Like, how they were able to afford that Death Star. Because I know how much that thing was. And yeah, for kids, even as well, as decently well off as they were, the fact that the kid got bitten by a radioactive spider and was a vigilante was not the most unrealistic part of the movie. It was the fact that they both owned that. But fine, whatever. So Ned takes the Legos to the face. And honestly, probably worse off now because he's now rolling around in glass and wood and Legos, which you and I are both fathers. We both know the feeling of any part of our body making contact with one of those little bastards in the floor, which I think is more torturous than anything else that we could do to this poor guy. And I feel like you should apologize at some point, but not right now. So Ned's going to like heave himself, or I'm sorry, Micro's going to heave himself off the floor, you know, pieces of Lego like sticking out of his skin, and it's going to look real comical. Until he pulls out the C4 that he had in his pocket. Because while Micro may not be the guy that's always pulling the trigger, he does provide the Punisher with everything. So at that point, he's going to throw the C4 charge at the wall that he knows is central to the area, and he's just going to click a button, watching that wall go and seeing the kid in the chair in front of him. Micro is going to say, "Let's dance." And at this point, what we're going to say is both of these guys are now free from their traps. They're in the same room. And really, they're just going to slap fight. Because we both know that there's a very unlikely chance that either of them really know any kind of martial art.
All right. So we're in slap fight mode now, right?
Yeah.
All right. So As Micro is going to has more years on young Ned here. So, you know, he's going to tactically evade and run away, as, you know, the young guns put it. So he's going to try to evade as much as possible. And at the same time, he's pulling out the sling ring and putting it on from his pocket. And so as he's being chased by Micro, he's trying to open up a portal so he can get away. And as he goes to do so, you know, the portal opens up right above him. It's not the portal he wants, but all that Legos that smashed him in the face come crawling down. And then so now he has Micro running on top of the Legos.
So Micro is going to be like bewildered, like how in the hell this works, because definitely in his Marvel, there is no magic. It's just all gunplay. So he watches this thing just dump a bunch of Legos on the ground, and he's just thinking, God damn it, again with these Legos. So he is going to tactfully evade, and by that I mean just run right through him, understanding how much pain and torment it's going to take him. But he's going to careen into Ned. And I'm going to say at this point, he's just going to grab the little bug by the face and just start slamming his head into the ground, screaming something like, "You are not my real dad," or, "No, mom, I don't want it, the roast beef. You can't make me have the roast beef," and just start crying as he's slamming this kid's head into the ground, ending this match.
Or Ned just so happens to open up a second portal. And it's Spider-Man come flying in mid-swing and then accidentally kicks Micro right in the face, knocking him out as Peter exits through the other portal.
But it's not the right Peter. We're going to say it's like Spider-Ham or something because it'd be funnier that way.
It's the fat one from the Spider-Verse. Yeah.
Perfect, perfect. All right, so I think that's a good place to stop. I definitely way more interesting than I expected it. But again, always when you have the lowest expectations of two characters, do you get the best part? But before we get into the results, let's go to Francis for the destruction spectrum.
It's time for the destruction spectrum, or as I like to call it, collateral damage that makes just a modicum of sense. Here, the hosts take the character's destruction potential and rate it on a scale of 1 to 5. To put it bluntly, it's how much collateral damage they can cause before the National Guard has to step in, be it a barroom brawl or a world-ending nuclear holocaust. The hosts will persevere and provide you with this valuable information because, let's face it, this is why you're here.
All right, Scott, I'm going to say a 0.25 out of 5 for these two.
That's a little generous. I was going to say 0.
I mean, they put a hurting on a Sizzler. I'll say that. Yeah, or like a Golden Corral.
We did break a Death Star. So
that's fair. I mean, yeah. I honestly, these two probably could do a hell of a lot of damage if it was just like computer simulation. I mean, watch, what was it, the fourth Die Hard, when it was Timothy Oliphant using the hacker skills to bring down the government with fire sales. Like, maybe they could do some damage, but it's you gotta shape expectations as far as how that goes. All right, man, are you ready for these results?
Yes, please.
All right, so I am actually pretty excited about this because this is one of the closest matches that we have ever called in Max Destruction history, which means I have done my job and you have done your job and really our fans, because this was one of our first whams, having these two go at it. And I think we just go from there. We just use whams from now on to pick our characters, and we probably can't go wrong. All right. So out of 1,000 matches, how are you feeling about Ned's chances?
I'm mainly going off of because of Mike. I look at the people they work with. Ned working with Spider-Man ain't teaching Ned how to fight. You bet your ass Frank Castle is teaching Micro how to fight. So I'm leaning more towards Micro.
All right. Well, out of 1,000 matches, one person got 51.1%, which means the other person got 48.9%. So quite literally a coin flip. And the winner of this week's match is Micro.
All right.
I'm telling you, legitimately, it was all the same with the exception of damage level. And we said that Micro had the advantage slightly in damage level, just the fact that he knows a bit more about weapon systems and he's not afraid to kill people, i.e. working with the Punisher. So good call on that, my friend. I think we could probably roll this all over again in a couple of years if we use Ned Leeds Hobgoblin and would be a completely different fight. But I am super excited about how this one turned out. Before we get out of here, though, we got to talk about next week's Wham.
Wham.
All right, Scott, who you got?
putting another female in there. And I'm going with the best one possible. And that is Xena, Warrior Princess.
Solid pick. Solid pick. Actually, I'm shocked I have not had her on yet. So we will let the fates and our audience decide who will be her matchup. And again, pretty excited about that. All right, man. So before we finally get out of here, we got to talk about next week. Talking about females and females in a cinematic universe and really kind of badass females, we split the baby in between like what you wouldn't really expect weapons and action heroes to be, put playful girls in there. And what we went with was 11 from Stranger Things versus Matilda from Matilda. So two telekinetics going at it. Ought to be a great matchup, and I'm definitely excited for it. All right, Scott, before we get out of here, anything else to say?
No, man. Hey, everyone, just check the Dynamic Network. Check out all the podcasts on there. Of course, come to the Max Destruction where we got your cinematic movie battles, and then Console Combat for your video games, Senjo World for your anime battles, and Dynamic Duel for DC versus Marvel.
Yeah, we all know who is the best show, obviously, which is ours. And this is confirmed not only by us, but by all the other hosts. And I think Scott might be having a super secret behind the scenes system of sorts to figure out who actually will be the champion of champions. More on that later. That's called a tease for all you cool cats and kittens out there, obviously. But yeah, follow us on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. We're all on there. Continue to throw feedback. As you can tell, this podcast has changed so much in the almost year that has been going on. And I can't wait to see where we go from here. Scotty, without further ado, we're going to call it a day. Have a good one, buddy.
Yeah, bro.
So two guys in a chair, huh? This is the best we can come up with. And I got to get a hold of my agent. This is ridiculous.
Of course, the adult beats the teenager.
I mean, obviously he's going to beat him like a redheaded stepchild.